today we have Celia Drunk with us, the DA mayoral candidate for the city of Tshwane, the capital of South Africa.
Yeah.
Why did you wake up and say, you know what, I'm available and I'm availing myself to do this for Tshwane?
As I say, in opposition, you say things. In government, you get to do things.
Mm. Yeah. What makes a good mayor in a coalition government?
What happens if the DA does not take over the city of Tshwane?
No, DA podcast, disclaimer, it's a controversial statement to make.
When that motion of no confidence happened, did you actually turn around and under your breath said, I'll be back?
If you become the mayor of Tshwane, the leader of a coalition where Action SA is your partner, you gotta know.
All right. Well, welcome back to the Democratic Alliance podcast. I am Donovan Nelson.
I am Kabelo Khobisa Ngaba.
And I'm Bax Nodada.
And today we have Silius Brink with us, the DA mayoral candidate for the city of Tshwane, the capital of South Africa.
Yeah.
Silius, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here on the DA podcast.
It's good to have you in Cape Town.
Yes.
Mm. What do you think is, if you had to give Cape Town, Capetonians some tips for whether, what do you think is the better weather, Pretoria or Cape Town?
Well, I can give you an idea. When I left Pretoria this morning, it was like, 15, 16 degrees, which terrible. I think it was like 8 in Cape Town. Yesterday, the sun was shining in Pretoria. It felt like spring. And I just heard, you know, pack this, pack that. You're going to freeze yourself to death. So no contest for me. Sunny skies in the north of the country. Sorry,
well, the mayor of Cape Town is a very close friend of yours, so you got to watch what you say on the show. All right. Well, talk to us about how did this start for you? I mean, maybe talk to us about how your upbringing sort of reared you into politics. How was that for you?
Yeah, I was always very precocious child. Mm. Interest in news and current affairs and what's happening in the world. And I had folks who, at the dinner table, always have quite serious discussions about what's going on in the world. And my parents spoke to me in adult terms. Hmm. So I grew up at a time when South Africa was transitioning from apartheid to democracy. So I was born in 1987. And when I was about 4 or 5 years old, there was CODESA, the multi-party negotiations, the change in South Africa. And I remember my dad being a very strong supporter of the transition to democracy and all of the debates around the dinner table. So that was an early political consciousness. Mm. And there was the Iraq War, the first Kuwait. So that's how my initial interest in politics was sparked. But if you were to ask me back then, what do you want to do? I would have said a policeman, of course. that's what I wanted to do. And then, you know, I'd like massive interest in cars. You remember the car magazine? Do they still car magazine?
Not anymore. I've seen a few Top Gear ones back in the day, but I don't know if they still do car magazine.
I mean, I bought car magazine with like stacks and stacks of car magazines that we had to throw out a couple of years ago.
The cars as well and sort of like line them up in a garage.
Absolute. I was like a car fanatic. Absolute car fanatic.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was school like for you? I mean, what was an average teenager life for you back when you grew up?
So growing up, this thing of being an advocate, fighting the battle for others and sometimes for myself, that came out very strongly. So I was like always arguing with a teacher, representing
like
the trouble.
Representative
head boy.
I was the chair of the student representative council in high school. You start intervening for your troublemaker friends. No, sir, don't, you know, this is not the right. And then often the troublemaker is you. Mm. So, advocacy came naturally to me, and I started doing public speaking, debating, and so forth. And that was school. I was born on the East Rand, if anybody knows that. East Rand, Brakpan.
I'm from Brakpan.
What?
I grew up in Dalpak.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. So I was born, born in Springs, which is next door. Spent my first 10 years in Brakpan, and then my folks moved to Palabora, right next to the Kruger Park in Limpopo. So very, very hot place. Grew up going to school with bare feet and, you know, it was always very hot. And Relaxed upbringing. But what frustrated me, of course, is politics and debate and the news cycle happens in the cities.
Mm. Yeah.
And growing up on the rural fringe, before the age of Facebook and social media and so forth, I got my news through the papers. So Phalaborwa is right at the end of the newspaper run when they still used to print newspapers.
Mm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You'd get the paper at 1 o'clock, the time that school comes out.
Mm.
So after school, I get the paper and I started writing letters to the newspaper. That was my early form of political activism.
Yeah. Is this as a school child?
As a school child, yes, yeah.
Writing letters about what?
Yeah. mostly attacking the DA. I was not in love with the DA from day number one.
Mm. It shows you what type of different child. I mean, I was writing love letters at the time.
I'm sure there were love letters there somewhere as well. They're just not very memorable looking back.
Hopefully they were not attacking love letters. But I mean, obviously, you're saying that you were writing these attack, letters on the DA. Then, when did the switch come?
It was considered. How I felt back then is I thought that the DP, which then became the DA, was just too aggressive in its style.
Mm.
You guys remember the Fight Back campaign? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, few of us do.
Yeah.
But it was a very aggressive, stand against this new ANC majority government, new at that stage.
Mm.
And I thought that might not be the right tone. Mm. And tone later on became such a prolific term.
Mm.
But when I started to look at the substance of the arguments, and I'm not going to say to you I was converted by reading the DA Constitution. It didn't happen that way. But when I started understanding the philosophy, a shared humanity of individuals, individual freedom, opportunity, what we have in common.
Mm.
We should never downplay what separates us as South Africans.
Yeah, definitely.
Diversity gives that texture to life and it gives meaning to life.
Mm.
But beyond all of that, we have a set of shared values as individuals. And there is, I believe, quite a solid majority around the vision that we want for this country, where an individual, regardless of circumstances of birth, through hard work, taking responsibility, can unshackle themselves from whatever held them back in the past.
Mm.
So that is the connection I made. And then talk about love letters. My high school girlfriend, she had an uncle who went to university with Tony Leon.
Oh, okay.
And for my 18th birthday, she arranged for me to meet Tony.
Mm.
So we're like, we're going to go to Joburg. We're going to get on the bus from Phalaborwa.
Mm.
And surprise, there's Tony Leon sitting at the at the dinner table one night. So that was quite an experience.
Nice. Do you understand how geeky you have to be for someone to introduce you to Tony as a birthday present?
Absolutely. I mean, she gave me a couple of options. There were other famous people. I was like, no.
Wow.
And then when it happened, it was a surprise.
Yeah, it's because of those attack leave.
Then I won't tell you that I met my wife at a DA table. So I went my wife at a DA table at Tux.
So you were destined for this thing.
Yeah. It followed you around.
But when just drawing back a little bit, obviously that happened, you went and met Tony.
Yeah.
Do you think that's when you start, beyond the fact that you started reading the reasoning and then started warming up to the DA?
I think it happened before then. Mm. By the time I met Tony, I was no longer writing attack letters against the DA. You've joined. And there was a member of parliament, she's in fact still in parliament, Desiree van der Walt, who recruited me because they saw this name from Phalaborwa writing letters. And like, who is this guy? Political. Like you have social media influencers nowadays that get paid to attack people. And so, you had these folks writing letters and they thought, maybe this is like some political opponent.
Yeah.
Some 50-year-old sitting in Pretoria or somewhere.
And it was a high school kid.
And Desiree discovered this and she actually got me involved in the DA as a member. You can join at 16. So that's when I joined. And I only met Tony 2 years later.
Oh, that's lovely, man. Mm-hmm. That's some solid story.
Okay, so take us through the journey. You are now at the Tux. Yes, to DA
University
table.
Of Pretoria. Oh.
University of Pretoria.
And the road from there to councillor and everything that's followed. How?
I went to study law at Tux. You know, if you grew up in Limpopo, Pretoria is your. Is your cosmopolitan center. Yeah. Yeah, that's where you go. I had family in Pretoria and I went to study law. Of course, I had an interest in law, but studying law was mainly to get into politics because I thought if I study political science, like who's. Yeah. Sorry. Max, I don't know. Have you got a political science degree?
I do a political science degree.
I knew this. I had an honors degree.
By the way, economics. I knew this. Don't worry.
I thought, like, if I study politics, I'm just going to be like a lecturer or something, or a commentator.
Yeah. An academic. You don't want to be an academic.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to pay the bills, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You need to pay the bills. And Mandela was a lawyer, and de Klerk was a lawyer. So law is very often a gateway to politics. So I went, I was more of a political student than a law student. But an amazing campus, University of Pretoria, an amazing place. And that's why I started involvement in politics and I became a councillor in 2011. And that's where my political journey started.
Mm. Well, and what your time in Parliament, because I think obviously the advantage you had before we get to your mayoralship, but the advantage you had is that you served, I think, on the portfolio that works or deals with local government matters. What was that experience like for you, having this sort of bird's eye?
And obviously, like drawing from that, you started in council, and you were in like quite an MMC and all of that into that portfolio committee and COCTA, you know, just that journey.
Well, I think the important thing is, even though I became a councillor in 2011. Feels very long ago now.
It was long, Silas.
I did finish my articles to become a lawyer, and I had a business before I became a member of the mayoral committee when Solim Simango was elected a mayor in 2016. So I did other things. And that was an important advice that was given to me. It's not just the issue of don't become financially reliant on a political career. It's also you need a wider window into the world. If you haven't run a business, if you haven't worried about, am I going to make payroll? Am I going to be able to pay salaries? Am I going to be able to pay? If you haven't done that, you don't properly understand as a politician the realities of ordinary people. And I think that is a big issue for us because so many people in politics come up having been in the trade union movement or researchers or political operatives. And then everything is a little bit theoretical. Whereas if you've been in the thing, if you've run a business, you've been in the professions, you get a bit of skin in the game. So there came a fork in the road for me in 2016. I was quite ready to go into the advocate's profession, which would have led me out of politics, to be honest with you. I really had it in my mind. I can't become a career politician at that point, believe it or not. And then the DA became the biggest party in Tswane in 2016. Solim Simango became the mayor. It's that election where we swept the ANC
out of
most of the metros. And although we didn't win a majority, which you really need at local government level, we were the biggest party in Tswane. I think we were the biggest party in Nelson Mandela Bay. And Solim Simango phoned and says, do you want to be MMC for Corporate and Shared Services? So like, here I've got a mentorship with an advocate. Are you going to do that? Or are you going to be part of government? Getting to run the Corporate and Shared Services portfolio, which includes legal services. And obviously it's a no-brainer. And that's why I think political careers are very attractive because they're exciting. I have to be honest with you, it's more exciting being in politics than being in a law office. So that landed me into government the first time. My portfolio was corporate services, legal services, all of the nuts and bolts of government. But it was an intensely stressful time because the DA was the biggest party in Tswane, but even with our coalition partners, we didn't have a majority in the council. So without a majority in a council, you can't appoint a city manager, you can't fire a troublesome city manager, you can't participate. You literally have to negotiate with the ANC and the EFF to get basic things done. And now you're trying to decader the administration. But at the same time, you've got to negotiate with the CADAs and with the EFF. It was an absolute disaster. So that was a very stressful period of time. And after that, I absolutely decided that it's not worth it to work yourself to death. You have to take some time. I then went to Parliament, and that brings us to local government. And the one thing I remember about Parliament, is, aside from the place burning down, Bax, you and I were.
Yeah, no, we were there.
We were the same here.
Yeah.
2019.
Yeah, 2019. We arrived at the same time.
No, we had a few months, and then COVID, and then the place burns down. But the
middle
one,
of COVID.
The one thing I remember about that time on the Corporate Services Committee, besides Faith Mutambi chairing the meetings and us having
that must have been exciting. So
yeah. I got along very well with Faith. I mean, this was in her post, post Zuma state capture. They took all of the RET politicians of the ANC and they made them committee chairs. And I had a very good relationship. She never shut me up on the committee, but she was very insistent during COVID. Every day was a committee meeting.
Wow.
But the one thing I remember from those days is just the terrible state of local government across the country. Mayors appearing before the committee, and then they can hardly articulate themselves. And then somebody says to you, well, that's the mayor. You know, she wears the chain, but that's not really the mayor. There's like a political boss who's, tugging at
pulling the strings.
And places in the Northwest where you have two municipal managers appointed by two factions of the council.
That's crazy.
And this idea of we cannot have this as representatives of the people. This can't be democracy. And no wonder local government is in the state that it is in. So a lot of local government experience running up to that point where I was elected mayor.
So what was the moment that you then decided, well, actually, let me go to Tshwane. I think I have not, gotten enough for my sins. Let me go to Tshwane. When did you take the decision?
So that decision was probably taken tacitly as far back as 2016 when I was a member of Solly's team. And it was incredibly important for me to keep the promise that we had made in 2016 to the residents of the capital city, to say, we can defeat the ANC, we can remove the CADAs from the administration, and we can do better. Unfortunately, because we didn't have a majority, and because of the political instability, and because we were fighting a CADA state that was left there by our predecessors, we simply couldn't achieve the things which we had hoped to after 2016. And that period of instability led to the council in 2020 being placed under administration by the Gauteng government. Before that period of administration, Tshwane had a budget surplus of more than 200 million. After the administration, there was a more than 4 billion rand budget deficit. So if you're talking about Tshwane's financial difficulties today, falling behind on the Eskom account, it can be traced back to a large extent to that period in time when the ANC Gauteng government intervened in Tshwane, supposedly to help the city.
And what are those timelines? Because some people might not get what was actually happening in Tshwane, because they'll paint a myth and say, well, the DA has been there for 8 years, But there are specific timelines where things were being, getting done properly by the DA. Then there was a takeover by the ANC. Then this thing was thrown back at us, What are those look like?
Very important point. 2016, Solly becomes the mayor. Our team gets in. 2017, we turn Tshwane's deficit into a surplus in 1 year. I'll never forget that business day headlines. Tshwane turns to surplus. And then we start acting against corruption. In particular, a contract by the name of Glad Africa, where the city manager is implicated. Solly takes that report to the municipal council. But remember, we don't have the votes in the council. And that's the funny thing about municipalities. You do disciplinary hearings of the municipal manager by a vote. It's a political process. I mean, you don't do that to DGs in national government. And we simply didn't have the numbers to act against this implicated official and this irregular contract. And now you have a top official, city manager, who's attacking the mayor. And that was incredibly destabilizing. And during the course of 2020, The ANC and the EFF started walking out of council meetings. Now, council needs a quorum, so 50% of your councillors have to be present. Mm. At that point, when the ANC and the EFF walked out, council lost its quorum. This happened three or four times, and that gave the pretext to the then ANC Gauteng government to say, no, 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 Tswane is chaotic. Mm. We now need to intervene. Mm. This happens at the very same time that lockdown comes.
Yeah.
Mm. So about March 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
And we can't move. The constitution says once a council is dissolved and put under provincial administration, you have to have an election within 90 days.
Mm. Yeah.
But you can't have an election in 90 days. The country's under lockdown.
COVID, yeah, yeah.
So 90 days ends up being 7 months.
Sure.
And the DA only manages to remove those provincial administrators from the ANC after that period with a constitutional court judgment.
Mm.
And immediately then, obviously, whoever governs the city was on the back foot because a lot of damage had been done.
Mm.
And that led to Randall Williams becoming the mayor of Tswane. And unfortunately, there was just a very, very unfortunate series of events and continued instability after that period. And a very long-winded way to get to that. So I said it was important for me to keep our promise.
Yeah.
And at a critical time, the opportunity arose to fill a vacancy for mayor of Tswane. It was after the city had obtained quite a disappointing audit result. And I said to myself, am I going to sit in parliament and debate things and write statements and work on the theory while there's an actual opportunity in government to make a difference, to actually, you know, as I say, in opposition, you say things. In government, you get to do things. And to me, it was about keeping that promise, and I have absolutely no regrets.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's just powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, Silas, obviously being part of all of that, with all the noise, the busyness, the seriousness, getting down to doing business, you also are a human being.
Well, hopefully.
So, I mean, what is it that you do, but based on just on your history that you shared with us, what do you do just in your lax time, you know, just you as a human, you know, living in Tswane? What is it that you do enjoy doing and just, you know, getting to relax?
It's interesting, you know, as obviously like an ambitious person, early interest in politics, you jump into life and your career and you get busy.
Mm.
But life is, in fact, the stuff that happens.
Yeah.
By the way, you know, I never sat down and thought, gee, I want to have two children. and after the first one, I thought, heavens no, I don't want to. And then my daughter sort of just arrived unannounced, and that's still the tenor of her personality.
I know.
You know, she's just, no planning there. It's just, And that forms such an important part of life now is family. And one of the upsides, I shouldn't joke about this, but one of the upsides of being voted out as mayor for this period of time and being in opposition
is that I got to
spend so much more time with my kids.
Yeah.
And taking them to school, and this was advice that Jordan Hill Lewis gave me.
Mm.
He said that he has to spend so much time as mayor. His time with his daughter is when he gets to take her to school.
Mm.
And after we had that discussion, me and my wife were in Cape Town. We watched some rugby with Jordan and his wife. We started adopting the practice. So I would take the kids to school, and you get to have conversations with these, you know, little people that are now developing and can actually, you know, argue. And so the family is a very important part of my life. My wife, my home. I enjoy nature quite a lot. So I love to hike. Pretoria's got some lovely hiking spots. Fairy Glen Nature Reserve, Grondkloof Nature Reserve, Wolfersprate. I love the grasslands of Pretoria. And then when I'm not doing serious stuff, listening to true crime podcasts, I am an absolute addict of this forensic stuff. Okay. You know,
and well, even that's the lawyer in you. Now.
Well, maybe I don't know. Maybe it's just like,
I think it is.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Even plane crashes. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that actually.
Aircraft Invasion. I was actually watching the Hildeburg series.
Yeah, yeah,
that was actually a very interesting one because I thought there was never a plane that ever crashed in South Africa, and when I go back, I'm like, oh, the Hildeburg actually.
Yeah. Well, it crashed in Mauritius.
I know it wasn't here,
but
it was an SAA flight.
It was an SAA flight, and all of the drama around that. And,
yeah,
guys, as public reps, we fly a lot. Why would you? You don't think about that when you get on a plane?
So that we know what to do. That's the whole point, right?
Yeah. I don't think you can actually do much.
Exactly.
But you must just know.
Tell the pilot, I've just watched that recent episode.
Yeah. It's like, I see something here. Like, I could stop this plane from crashing.
But it
gets you to pray a lot.
Yes.
You know, especially when you're in Parliament. At least twice a week.
Saying your prayers.
Get your stuff right before this plane gets off.
Depends which airline you're on. You probably said more things than others. You've described your leadership in 20 as sort of like drinking from a fire hydrant.
Exactly.
I loved that analogy, but do you want to share with us what that means and why that is actually something that you think about often?
So the peculiar thing about our democracy in Tswane in particular is that our idea is you vote for the leaders who offer a mandate. They get an instruction from voters. Then you go in there and you execute the mandate.
Mm.
But in our cities, and I believe probably a national government as well, this government of national unity, you get there and the officials who are meant to assist you implementing your program of action in government are washed out ANC politicians.
Mm. Yeah.
They call themselves CADRs. That's a formal policy, CADR deployment, adopted by the ANC in 1997. And it's the original state capture program.
Mm.
So that even if the ANC loses an election, which it tends to do quite often these days, they have control over the levers of power. And it's not as if there's this conspiracy of officials that, you know, want to undermine you. It's just more broader.
Yeah.
Many of the civil servants don't understand the DA's philosophy. Mm. They don't understand anything but the ANC's way of doing it.
Mm.
And it's almost like, you know, can we adapt this a little bit for you? And it's not about adapting.
Mm.
It has to be a wholesale change.
Mm.
If we don't stop corruption, if we don't stop irregular expenditure, the circumstances for people are not going to improve.
Mm.
Water is going to get worse. Electricity outage is going to get worse. So that is the maelstrom that you step into. But luckily, by the time I did, I understood a little bit of this. You know, I had a bit of background. And the other thing that I was incredibly fortunate to have was a very strong, diverse team on my mayoral committee. Governing a city, any city in the country, but Tswane in particular, you simply don't know every nook and cranny. You don't know every strand of culture. You don't know every block and you know, the history there. And that's why it's so incredibly important to have a team of
people. You don't have a monopoly on the knowledge.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I mean, just picking up from what you're saying, so there's a culture problem where people, you know, in public service have been, you know, inculcated in such a way that there's a, you know, preserve culture of corruption and doing things the wrong way and serving that particular individual rather than the residents of Tswane is what you picked up there.
Exactly. And it started, I think, with keeping positions open for ANC party agents. Well, it's fairly easy. And then you start denying promotion to those outside of the ANC tent. And then the third phase is that competent professionals, young people, no longer apply for jobs in government.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm an engineer, I'm an attorney, I'm an accountant, I'm a planner. Working for municipality is a political thing. It will be career death to me. So the third order consequence is that you deter the people with skills, knowledge, integrity from actually taking up positions in government. And that is an incredibly difficult thing to fix. So many young engineers in particular who can help us solve problems of leaking sewers and of a broken wastewater treatment system.
Underground infrastructure.
Instead of being at the cutting edge working with government, either as officials or service providers, because that's the other thing. You know? fewer and fewer good people want to do business with government. Mm, yeah. Like, oh, no, no, I'm going to pay a bribe there.
Yeah.
And so, Bax, that's essentially the bigger problem that we have to contend with. Mm. But at the same time, I want to say I have met some incredible people working for government. Mm. Many of them who would not vote for the DA, but who have insisted on an identity of being a professional person. Mm. Say, I will serve whatever government. And maybe the fact that the ANC is imploding helps with a bit of forward thinking.
Even if you
might have started out as a cadre in your career, but this country is not going to be governed just by the ANC in future. And so we've got to look at actually solving people's problems. That's the legitimacy crisis of our democracy. Mm. Democracy has to be effective. Mm. Something has to happen when there's a change at the ballot box.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, so Celia, I just want to check. Eventually we're going to have to get to what you want to do in the next term. But I think the place to start actually with your first run in office, given the challenges you've outlined, especially the cadres trying to stop you at every point, can you just reflect on where did you have to actually start trying to get this thing right? Mm. What were your priorities? And like, what was the things that got interrupted by the unnecessary ousting, if you will.
Yeah. So there's a funny story. We had a DA Congress. Remember the DA Congress in 2023? Mm-hmm. It was 2023.
Yeah, 23.
Gallagher
Estate, Moonshot Pact, and so on. That weekend. And then shortly after it was Easter. And on Easter Sunday, 2023, I wake up and there's no cell phone signal. And the electricity is off. And I don't know what's going on. And eventually I found out that someone had destroyed these massive power pylons that run across the N4 highway that connects the city to one of its major sources of electricity. Feeding like half of the city. Mm. That's my first few days as mayor. It's like half of the electricity supply of the city has been cut off.
Yes,
dear. You know, I'm like, what now? So I mean, that was like, welcome to the job, you know? If you thought this was going to be an easy ride.
Baptism of fire.
But more seriously, and we got the electricity restored fairly soon. Mm. But I knew that the Hammanskraal water crisis had been a taint on the reputation of several governments in Tshwane. Mm. The fact that Hammanskraal communities, despite earlier warnings as going back as far as 2004, when the master plan said that Rooiwal wastewater treatment plant has to be upgraded, it never was. And as the city grew, as the strain increased on the infrastructure, the quality of the water became worse and worse. And there were some serious attempts to fix that, but with a political instability, those attempts were in fact stalled. So one of the first meetings I attended, or first these seminars, I attended a sanitation workshop in Cape Town with city manager Johan Mettler. I said, I learned that the Minister of Water at that stage, now the Minister of Police.
Whatever
the president feels he was. But it was altogether less controversial back then. I learned that the Minister of Water at that stage was going to be at the sanitation workshop. And I said to Mettler, we have to meet the minister. Mm. We have to resolve the issue of Rooiwal. Mm. This thing of local government and national government blaming each other for whose fault it is has to end. People in Hammanskraal and around Rooiwal do not care if it's a national government competency or it's a local competency. They want the problem resolved. And to his great credit, the minister at that stage said to me, okay, in 2 weeks, or the next 2 weeks, we're going to form a task team. We're going to look at what do we do with Rooiwal. If to share resources, bring in the private sector, whatever it is. And a few days later, in my first day to the city, I couldn't make this announcement. I've met with the minister. We've taken hands. And that weekend, that Sunday, there was an outbreak of cholera in Tshwane. It was terrible medieval disease. And it was, you know, I suppose that crisis could have scuppered all of our efforts to fix this water problem, but it had the opposite effect. It brought urgency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It said people have now lost their lives. And even though, you know, we couldn't trace the outbreak of cholera back to the city's water systems, the point is, if folks don't trust the water in their taps, all of those details mean very little. Mm. And over the years, you had this system of exploitative water tankers, folks charging the city $70 million a year just to run water tankers, and then still charging some of them. Charging residents, you know, that kind of exploitative practice. And we all know that there are links between ANC ward councillors and this water tankering business.
Yeah, it's a water mafia. Actually.
It's a water mafia.
That's literally what it is.
Like. You know, the dynamics of the business depends on who controls the streets, who controls the ground. Same with waste collection. Another classic, massive ANC business. But we ended up devising a solution to this decades-long water crisis in Hammanskraal. We couldn't have done it without national government. We couldn't have done it without that minister at that time. Mogale's Water, which is a national government entity, put about 300 million rand into a package plant, which has now been constructed at Klipdrift, which is on a different river system. You get the Pienaars River, and then you get the Arpies River. The Arpies River is polluted by Rooiwal. So this package plant, a modular treatment plant, has the promise of delivering clean water to the taps of the people of Hammanskraal after years and years and years. The first phase was launched, but unfortunately, this is now the point where political instability once again. When Action SA, who used to be a DA partner, switched their support to the ANC, one of the consequences is that Hammanskraal clean water project was delayed.
Can you explain a little bit why it got delayed? So it's contentious, but here's my perspective. I think Action SA had planned to swoop in after the groundwork was done and take the credit. Of course, it's subsequently gone belly up, so that didn't quite work out. Yeah. I can't figure out what went wrong? Because you had laid the groundwork for this. What's gone wrong?
Got the plan to implement.
So let's start with Action SA. And then you were saying, they did very poorly in the 2024 general election. They missed the GNU bus. You know, for good or bad, that decision they made. Mashaba still had his voice playing in his head, "I'll never work with ANC under any of that." He still had that.
On repeat.
On repeat. And I think they blamed the DA and the Moonshot Pact for their terrible election outcome. In Tshwane, their support was like cut in half. And I can tell them why it happened, because they don't have anything distinct to offer. And Mashaba was overseas for most of the election campaign. Come on, like, what do you expect? What do you expect to happen with your chances? So they did badly. But they did have this position in the Tshwane coalition. They held the deputy mayorship, Nasipi Moya. But they were struggling to distinguish themselves. And I think the ANC in Gauteng, who were also very opposed to the GNU, came along. They got Mashaba's ear and they got it into his head that he could sort of revive his party if his member gets to wear the mayoral chain, even if it's an ANC-dominated government. And at that point, Tshwane had improved finances. In 2023, we had the best improvement on financial sustainability of all the metros in the country. Better audit outcome. New senior management team. Action against the Rooiwal 5, officials implicated in awarding that irregular tender to Edwin Sodi and his associates, also related to Rooiwal. So you were on the cusp of, I wouldn't say mission accomplished at all, but you're on the cusp of a stable platform from which to deliver. And I think what Action SA and Mashaba and Moya saw was, we'll just cut the ribbons. But that's not how government works. I remember my colleague Temba Fossi, was member of the mayoral committee for utility services. He's now the spokesperson in opposition. He used to be at Rooiwal almost every week, checking up that the work gets done. And that's how you run an effective government in times of crisis. You are there, you wheelbarrow, you push people. And I think that the new folks, as you suggest, thought this is a ribbon cutting exercise. And now, although the first phase has finally been launched, there are four other phases. The whole thing should have been done by now. The city could have saved tens of millions in the watering, tankering, yeah. and you know, we could have had a situation where trust is restored. Mm-hmm. But that's what you get with political games, and why it is so incredibly important to know what you vote for.
Yeah.
When you go and vote. Mm.
I like that, because I think, you know, it really brings to this point that each political party has a different priority. And often you see that priority when they pass the IDP, when they pass the budget. You know, I've just read up on Tshwane's budget for last financial year that was probably passed in this beginning of this year, increase in water tanker spending, increase in security tendering or contracts. What's the obsession there with water tankers and securities?
So those are typically the ANC connected businesses. You know, not great barriers to entry, so you don't need you just need some muscle on the ground, and then you can run those businesses.
Sure.
And it's a controversial statement to make. You know, DA podcast disclaimer. But it is a business that is rife for corruption, security, waste collection, water tankering. And in the adjustment budget, after they'd removed us at the end of last year, the adjustments budget happens in February. They increase spending on water tankers by 64%, despite the promise of Hammans Kraal giving people water in their taps instead of tankers. So they budget for failure, essentially. They increase spending on security companies, and it's not technology, it's not state-of-the-art stuff that, you know, J.P. Smith is pioneering here in Cape Town. This is like stationary guards. They call it watchman services.
Wow.
They increase spending on that by 103%.
Ridiculous.
And I mean, we went through a strike the year before, and we didn't even spend that money, despite disruptions to you know, that you had people smashing water pipes and closing valves. You had attacks on municipal offices and depots. We didn't even spend that money, that kind of money, on security companies and water tankers. So what is going on here?
Well, that's the question to you, Celia. What are they planning to...
The answer is...
What's the need?
The ANC has taken over. Sure. And that's what we've come used to expect from ANC government.
I mean, I guess, Liz, this draws, you know, to the point where there's now an attack on senior officials in the municipality, with all these things being approved, which is, I mean, a red flag for corruption waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Why are they now attacking, you know, senior officials, over and above the fact that the budgets have been increased on these things that have nothing to do really with residents, because residents want permanent water, a safe city, and a functional government, and officials that actually do the work for them and not politicians.
Yeah.
Why is there an attack now on senior officials in the linkage of all of this?
Well, let me just close off this point very quickly about the, because if you have money and you spend it and you provide extra things, that's okay. But the increase in water tankering and security companies came at the cost of taking money away from ordinary water and electricity teams. And so MoneyWeb has reported that the city of Tshwane, since the beginning of this year, has had more power outages than when Eskom load shedding was still in place.
Yes.
Wow.
That is the effect of bad policy and budget decisions. But now to the point of the attack on senior officials. So how councils work, politicians get elected in the form of a mayor, a city council, on a mandate, a promise to the people, a set of policies, but then you need the assistance of the professional bureaucrats, the civil service, the municipal administration, to help you build a service delivery machine. Mm. It's not the mayor that fixes the streetlights, cuts the grass, although sometimes we do it, you know, join the teams and fill the potholes. But you actually need a machine to deliver that runs in terms of the instruction that the politicians got from. And the DA recruited, well, I'm saying the DA, but it's us and our coalition partners, recruited a guy by the name of Johan Mettler.
No, yeah. Mm.
And Bax, you would know him because you're Eastern Cape.
Yeah, it's from Nelson Mandela Bay.
Yeah, he was municipal manager of Nelson Mandela Bay, actually brought in by an ANC minister at that stage, Pravin Gordhan, who was minister of local government, as part of a rescue mission in Nelson Mandela Bay. And then when Athol Trollope, ironically, became the mayor of the Bay. They appointed Mettler, and then Trollope was removed, just like I was removed.
Yes, and then they chased him away.
And the ANC, EFF, and UDM at that stage, Coalition of Corruption, went after Mettler. And it's all written up beautifully in this book called How to Steal a City.
How to Steal a City.
And Mettler is one of the good guys from that book. Mm. So we got it that he was recruited as city manager for Tswane, Mr. Fix-It, Mr. Rescue. Mm. And he brought in a senior management team. And one of the first things that Mettler had to act on was a report into Rooiwal. Mm. And a tender that had been awarded to the ANC benefactor Edwin Sodi and his company called Blackhead Consulting for the upgrade of Rooiwal. Mm. The forensic report said Sodi and his associates should never have received that tender. Mm. They didn't have the construction industry grading. They simply didn't have the qualifications. And lo and behold, they couldn't finish the project. They walked off. That delayed progress at Rooiwal and getting clean water to the people of Hammanskraal by months.
Sure.
And Mettler took the steps against the implicated officials, including the head of supply chain management, the head of tenders for Tswane. Five senior officials, the Sowetan, in a famous heading, called them Sodi's blessers.
And I'm sure he blessed more people, but
Well, they were on suspension, a whole long dragged out process, and eventually Mettler made the decision, we're going to suspend them, go to the Labour Court and have them fired. Mm. And that's where we are at the moment. But the ANC doesn't want those folks fired. They want them back at work because they are an integral part of the ANC's network.
Yeah.
Remember, the ANC is not just a political party. They are a business network.
Yes.
Somebody told me.
I don't know
me
if it's a business network. We run businesses. I don't know what it's corruption network.
Let's
call it a corruption. A clear answer to your question. That's why they don't want Mettler. That's why they don't want independent officials, because they prefer an ANC cadre. Just like they can run the mayor, who's a third-party candidate, they want a city manager that they can run. Mm. And Mettler is not in that game. So for us as an opposition, it's become incredibly important. Not that Mettler is politically affiliated, but we as Tswane have suffered so much under incompetent management. Mm. Now that we finally have a serious person of integrity leading the administration, we must show others, we must show young people that there are political leaders who, if the corrupt go after you, are willing to stand up for you.
So, surely if there's a young person listening to this podcast that lives in Tswane and listening to all the context that you've just given, if there's an election tomorrow, they probably will vote DA because they're listening to this and thinking, well, the DA is not the problem that Tswane has. I mean, if you look over the past few years, they've invested more in personal things like salaries and et cetera, than investment in the infrastructure, for instance. Surely it's an easy statement for us or argument to make to say vote for the DA in Tswane. Why do you think voters are still not coming out in their numbers and giving us that majority that we need?
It's an unfortunate thing that young people in particular have disengaged from politics or just never got into it. Mm. And maybe it runs with socioeconomic circumstances, with unemployment, with lack of opportunities, because if you find yourself in those conditions, you might think that the system is against you in any event, regardless of what you do.
Mm. Yeah.
And you've got other pressing priorities, like getting bread on the table, paying for your kids' school and so forth. And I think that's the bigger context in which youth disengagement happens in politics. But I am optimistic that we can convey that message. And ultimately, it's the people that do get to the ballot box that decide. That's an important thing in politics. Yeah. We can bemoan everyone that doesn't show up. But the most powerful argument to get people there is saying, if you vote, you get to decide the stakes of how power is divvied up. Yeah. You get to decide how this place is governed. Yeah. And the important message to those young people is that there is a future. There is hope for South Africa. Mm. We have been let down. We have been disappointed. But never buy into this idea that it's all over and that everything is just going to hell. It's not true.
Yeah.
Our country has been through a lot. Mm. If you read history, if you know, we were at a precipice of civil war, this country.
Yeah.
And we overcame that. And even though the politicians have been disappointing, there are people of integrity who are fighting for a future for young people to make sure that there are the opportunities and the jobs. But it starts with stuff like fixing infrastructure. Talk about infrastructure. It doesn't sound sexy.
Yeah.
But if you don't have water, if you don't have electricity, if you don't have the roads, you're not going to get the investments. Mm-hmm. You're not going to build the confidence. Mm-hmm. And that is why we need to be involved in this political process.
So, Celia, I have a question on that. Just looking at where our message is resonating and where it's not. Mm. By sheer coincidence, two nights ago, I happened to be having a conversation with someone in Midrand who was parroting the line, which I see Action SA is driving all over social media.
Which is the only place they seem to exist.
Yes, precisely. Like,
you know, they would win the social media election.
You're not 100%. Wrong.
Imagine Mashaba's social influencer bill at the end of the month.
On a serious note. So one of the things that they were reflecting is the sentiment that the DA only is outstanding in Tshwane for white communities. And of course, I don't agree with the sentiment, and I don't even think it is reflective of reality, but there's something about it that is catching on with people on the street. So you say you're confident that we can get our message through. How do we do that? How would you be answering the person I was on the phone to convince them that this is not true?
In fact, these are the facts. This is the reality.
But before you even get to the facts, you have to understand the political context. We are a non-racial party. We see a non-racial future. We believe in this human solidarity. However, South Africa does have a history. It's got a divided history. And race politics is still a powerful mobilizing point. The same things that people say about Tshwane, they say about Cape Town. You know, even though Cape Town, statistic, fact for fact, best access to running water, sanitation, to housing, and that's why people come to Cape Town from across the country. Eastern Cape and from other parts. Much farther afield because they come for the opportunities. Because back in 2006, Ellen Ziller built from a very fragile coalition a machine that could deliver a basis for infrastructure. It's not perfect. Cape Town cannot by itself eradicate economic inequality. It can create job opportunities, but it can't change the country. So even though best access to the poor of services, they say the same things about Cape Town. So you can talk about the facts, but you have to also understand the context and people who play on racial divisions in order to avoid the facts. Now let me get to the facts of Tshwane. Majority of our capital budget when I was in office 18 months as mayor was spent either in the townships or for the benefit of townships. Projects like the upgrade of the Rooiwal wastewater treatment plant, like all of the efforts to get people to have water in their taps instead of tankers in Hammanskraal, a project to stabilize what we call the IA substation in Shoshanguve, because folks in Shoshanguve experience tremendous power outages, constant power outages. One of our key projects to stabilize power supply. The Townlands Social Housing Development, one of the biggest in the country. We completed that project. Hundreds of households. Many of the folks there who used to live in informal settlements now have a place at a safe, well-built, well-maintained facility in the inner city, close to places of work, close to schools. And the beneficiaries of these projects were overwhelmingly black and poor, and those who aspire to the promise of social mobility, of moving up in life. That is what we as the DA are about. If we don't do that, we are nothing. We're not living up to our brand and our promise. What I can tell you is that unless Tshwane's finances improves, unfortunately, service delivery will not improve. Because the way that you improve services, including to the poor, is by spending a whole lot of capital and making sure you get value for your money.
Yeah. Mm.
So if you're not collecting the money due to you, if you're not managing your affairs, your capital budget becomes smaller and smaller, and then you can't maintain stuff. You can't maintain the Rooiwal wastewater treatment plant. You can't maintain your substations. You can't replace the cable that gets stolen. You can't refurbish the roads. So good management is not an elitist thing for wealthy people in the suburbs.
Yeah.
In fact, the wealthiest people have the means to protect themselves against a failing state. Security-wise, services-wise, it's unfair that you have to do that, but folks who've got means can do that.
They do it, yeah.
It is the poor who depend on government maintaining the schools, the roads, the sewage system. They depend on good management. And that's why when these ANC politicians, you know, speak to the divisions of the past and of race and pretend that just by saying, okay, no, this is a party for whites, this is a party for, that they can actually win the argument, that is ridiculous. And I think that more and more people see through that. And we see that in the results. But listen, it's a long slog for the DA. We are not going to overcome massive historical divisions just like that. It is a process of building trust, of proving ourselves, and that takes me back to that point of the promise I made with Solim Simanga in 2016, that we can remove the ANC and we can do better. And we're still, I'm still absolutely dedicated to that project.
And just coming to that, Silius, about, you know, going back to building trust. You sat and you said to yourself, I am not going to give up on Tswane, and I'm going to put my hand up because you have a vision for that city. And you want to restore the hope in which the residents should have. Why did you wake up and say, you know what, I'm available in Silius, and these are the reasons I'm available, and I'm availing myself to do this for Tswane?
I think that the first point is when I was removed, when our government was removed from power, it was always very clear it wasn't the voters of Tswane that made that decision. In fact, the voters of Tswane haven't spoken since 2021. And a lot of the instability that we have in the metros in the north of the country in particular is because you have this revolving door of people. So you might have genuinely talented folks in politics or in administration, and then you get removed by the act of some political opponent. Like, oh, heavens, I put all of this work in. Let me now go back to parliament. How unfortunate. But you can't do that. You've got to stick in there. I feel we have to finish the work that my team and I started. And we have to maintain a measure. If we want stability in the metros, we also have to contribute to that stability. So the Democratic Alliance has been incredibly supportive of me, given me and my team backing in opposition because we care about the metros and we care about the north of the country. This is, you know, we spoke about the racial division. This was this impression of the DA as a Cape Town party. And I think what has happened in politics in the past few months shows how much we care about the rest of the country and Gauteng in particular. I'm not authorized on this podcast to speak about Helen Zille and her candidacy for Johannesburg. And you know, I don't know what the outcome of that's going to be. But that shows you how serious we are about the north of the country and Gauteng. And Bax, that was what stuck, what kept me there. And I've never lost the vision of what we could achieve. Everything else that has happened in between, the animosity, was you grow a thick skin and you like pick yourself up. That's politics. If you can't live through that, you shouldn't become a politician. But through all of that and the animosity and the, you know, the setbacks and you know, you see your work being taken apart. The power stations, we were at the point of making the city's mothballed power stations available to the private sector, we had budgeted. And to, you know, now the mayor makes this exact same announcements. She's in a worse position than we were when we left office. So you see the work that you and your team put in, but I never lost the vision of what Tswane should be.
And what is that vision for the next 5 to 10 years?
We have to eliminate corruption. We've got to finish what we started with the Rooiwal 5, because that will induce and inculcate a culture change in the organization. And that is at the essence of turning around an institution. We have to improve the city's financial position so we can invest in infrastructure. Mm. Listen to any serious person who knows about local government. Listen to what Jordan Hill Lewis is doing in Cape Town. It's all about infrastructure investment. Mm. And you have to make sure that you get value for money for the roads that you build, for the substations, for the wastewater treatment plants. Mm. Together with that, I would love for us to finish the Hammanskraal Clean Water Project and eliminate dependence on those water tankers once and for all. Put that 60, 70 million rand into pipes, into infrastructure for those communities. And then, importantly, the project of the power stations. It's people think that load shedding is over, and you know, hopefully it is. But we're burning a lot of diesel as a country. That's the fact. And if we are to grow, we need to feed that growth with energy. To me, it's essential that the capital city is competitive in the energy market. We've got these power stations. We want to open them up to IPPs, to the private sector, to investment. And that will feed further investment and jobs. And here is the unfortunate thing. Like the Western Cape farms, who are very vulnerable to these US tariffs, the motor industry, Nelson Mandela Bay, East London, Tswane, Pretoria, is also very, very vulnerable to that 30% tariff. In Roslyn, you have BMW making X3 BMWs for export directly to the United States. It's their third biggest market. Those BMWs are put together by hands of South Africans who live in Harankua, in Roslyn, in Pretoria North. Those tariffs are going to hurt us. And so, if the city does not have its act together in making sure infrastructure is improved, in drawing other investment opportunities, I'm afraid we're going to feel that pain without hope for the future. So, my vision is to build a capital city that delivers to the honest, hardworking people who live there.
So, Celia, you are about to have a very long year ahead of you. Is like campaigning an awful part of the job, or are you actually a campaigner? Is this what you do for fun?
You can't call me onto the DA podcast. All right, I hate campaigning.
No, I don't like it.
I mean, I can honestly say I hate campaigning. I don't care that I'm a politician.
No, I enjoy it. And honestly, when you are not in government, you find it easier to speak to people. Because and this is the downside that the ANC and their partners will realize in Tswane.
They're about to find out.
You know, when you're the incumbent, you are responsible for everything, and everyone wants to talk to you with demands. Whereas if you're a candidate for office, you can sit down and have a decent conversation. Yeah, okay, what can we actually do? So the campaign starts for the first 3 months with what we call a listening tour. We reach out to businesses, to civil society. We see different places of the city, and also just celebrate city life. You know, politics doesn't always have to be standing next to an open sewer or a failed project. Sometimes it's going to a cheese and yama, or going to have your hair cut at a South African with a South African entrepreneur, or just enjoying city life. And that is what I look forward to. The next 3 months is also going to be important for us in actually formulating the pledges which we're going to make, because that's how we do things as the DA. We don't just say, vote for the blue, you know.
It's not for vibes.
I mean, I want our campaign in Tswane to be as crystal clear as Jordan's campaign in Cape Town.
I would say invite me for a haircut in Tswane, but I don't know.
I can't really enjoy that. So.
I'm sure we can do something with a beard.
No, my beard's not going.
Polish some shoes. We can treat you back. We can treat you.
And what are some secrets of the campaign trail? Do you have any must-do things or like pumped-up music? What do you enjoy?
Well, I want to know: Are you gonna use TikTok as a platform?
Absolutely. Like if you're not on TikTok, and I'm gonna be honest with you, I do stuff for TikTok, but I haven't got it like open and engaged myself. There's a member of the team who's more excited about it. But definitely, TikTok is a very important
aspect
of it.
You're more excited about 20, yeah.
I'm more excited about 20. Because if you're TikToking the whole time, you don't get time to talk to people or you don't understand what's going on.
Just admit you don't know how to use it. It's okay. No, you don't have to make excuses. It's okay.
No. It's just social media, unfortunately, has this tendency of sucking you in.
Yeah.
And then you lose touch with real life.
Well, just get a team. Just get a social media team.
No, you know what? It's all lined up.
The New York mayoral candidate for the Democrats, Rohan
Mamdani. Mamdani.
He literally just used TikTok as a platform. And one of the nice ideas he gave me, which I'm going to try and implement in the next election, is he walked for, I think, 3 or 5 kilometers, and he just had a video camera and a microphone, and he just interviewed people.
Yeah.
You know, what is, you know, the thing that you want to see in the city?
Yeah.
What are you looking for in a mayor? And he just, you know, curated those things. I think a nice idea for you would be go to every single rugby match on a Saturday, whether it's at a school or a rugby club, and just interview people for 3 months. I mean, the amount of TikTok videos you can get out of that. It's quite good.
Absolutely. And, I mean, it's Mamdani.
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 Yeah, you corrected Trump as well.
He's terrible policies, but quite a compelling style of campaigning.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's important to learn from that. But the important point, if you watch him, somebody else is doing the filming.
No, of course.
So he hasn't got his face in the phone the whole time, and that gives you the opportunity to engage.
Absolutely.
So I'm looking forward to that. My secret.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let the blood sugar drop. I need to eat. I get hangry.
Yeah. Interesting.
So my team knows, you know, like always like a chocolate bar or something.
Don't get hangry at voters.
Can't get hangry at voters.
No. We need every single vote at this
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely.
And what's your favorite between a town hall versus a rally?
Oh, I prefer interaction.
The
one more interaction. I mean, rally is great.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful and you can charge up the crowd.
Yeah.
But at a rally, you speak to people already convinced.
Yes.
And they're primed, and it's important to look after your activists and your supporters. And hey, mom is always there. And,
yeah.
Like, you know, your wife and kids. But a town hall setting or a smaller house meeting gives you the opportunity to actually listen. It's like, I didn't know that. You know, what is your impression? It's that interviewing the voter type of thing that you're talking about.
That's amazing. And if you were to be a sports star, what would you be?
I was definitely not a golfer. I mean, I've got golf clubs, but I can't connect.
It might get you into the Oval Office, actually.
There you go. Yeah,
well, I'm not sure you want to go there. Let's leave that for another day.
I don't know. You're giving me swimmer vibes.
Me too.
I see some swimmer there.
Cricketer, maybe?
No.
I actually am very interested to hear your answer on this.
I'm not a brilliant sportsman, but I do swim. I do go to the gym. I am physically fit. The more days I've spent outside of the mayor's office, the more time I obviously get to exercise.
Yeah.
But I suppose in temperament and in all of these things, probably rugby. Yeah. That would be the closest. You know, you get knocked down and you get tackled and
back up,
you know, you gotta.
Yeah.
You got to have your wits about you, and sometimes you lose a you lose.
Do you have a favorite rugby team at the moment?
Blue Bulls.
Blue Bulls. Oh, obviously, 20. Favorite rugby player?
Come on.
I quite
that
like.
That was a test. just in case it says Stormers or something.
Well, that would have been the end of my political career in Swane. I quite like Chamberlain. Blue Bulls player Chamberlain.
Okay, I was going to pretend like I know rugby, but I have no idea who that is.
Yeah. Right, so we'll send you a. Yeah. We'll send you.
You got invited to one of the games.
Yes. We'll get you to Loftus. We'll get you to Loftus.
Or maybe just go search Chamberlain on TikTok or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a video somewhere.
Or I could just go with Celia.
We'll invite you to Loftus.
Please don't take away
You're agnostic now, so like we take you to Loftus, you'll end up wearing the light blue.
Indeed. So
I wanted to just come back to one thing, which is coalition politics. So you're running for mayor now, very certain that we probably have a coalition. We're hoping that the DA is the majority party in that coalition to reduce the parties perhaps to 2 to 3 parties. So I think also creates a little bit of stability in decision making. The future of coalition politics and local government is something that I often think about quite a lot as a ward councillor myself. I think we, you know, have a pool of leaders in our country in politics that are really making it difficult for municipalities to work well. I often heard from your team when you were the mayor that you invited opposition councillors and leaders to actually come and engage with you, speak to you about issues and concerns that they have. What makes a good mayor in a coalition government?
Heavy question. The important point is to know what you believe in, to have your own program of action, your own core convictions and what the city needs. Because if you don't have that, you're going to end up making compromises that lead you to fail. Whereas if you know your mind, if you know your mandate, if you understand what needs to be done, water, electricity, finances, personnel, then you can also make compromises. Okay, I can make this policy concession to a coalition partner, or I can grant this to an opposition party because I know that it will either complement the program or at the very least it won't untangle things. So that is incredibly important. And inside a coalition, there has to be broad ideological coherence. That's why a DA-EFF coalition won't work. It's like oil and water, and it doesn't. There's no, if you spend most of your time fighting about, you know, should this person be appointed in this position, who should this tender go to? No, then you're not going to change things. Then you're just going to frustrate the voters and lead, you know, cause more disappointment. And the third important point is you must have people of integrity locally. And that's one of the first things that Helen Ziller told me when I assumed the position. She said, now you're the mayor, you take responsibility for the coalition. No more these constant meetings with national leaders of the party. You sort it out there. And in fact, very interestingly, Helen was one of the first people to tell me, try and, you know, build a strong relationship with parties like Action SA, with Nasipi Moya. Assume the best. Bring them closer. Which is counterintuitive of this image everyone has of Helen.
Exactly.
And I really took that to heart. So you have to go in there with good faith, but backed up by, I'm actually working with a group of people who broadly share my worldview. Because if at the heart of government there's constantly fighting over over every little thing, then government doesn't move.
And did it make the municipal worker strike easier to have that?
Or harder, I'm wondering. Or harder.
I mean, that's one of the things that you had to kind of fight.
That was tough. Here's the interesting thing about this strike and about us saying no to salary increases for councillors and staff, by the way. It's not just staff. That decision was made by the council, not the mayor. And the ANC voted for that. The ANC voted for the budget and the motion to forego the salary increases. It's only later when they fell out with SAMU and they had to, you know, explain where this comes from. Because they saw the figures. They knew that the city didn't have the money to pay those increases. There was a solid case. And their councillors actually voted for it. Action SA voted for it. But of course, your conviction is tested when the workers then come into the streets and block the road and start protest. That's when you know, you see the difference between those who actually believe and can carry things through and the ones who are just there for the show. And that was incredibly difficult, but I had that council mandate supported by the opposition. And I could explain to union leaders, and many of them I built strong relations with in a very difficult period of time. I could explain to them, there are municipalities in the Free State who didn't apply for exemptions to salary increases. They were happy to grant the increases on paper. And then a few months later, those municipalities couldn't make payroll. So they agreed to pay increases, but the effect of that was they couldn't make payroll. They couldn't pay people on time. And the other thing those municipalities did is they dipped into workers' pension funds to fund operational expenditure. Tshwane did not do that. We made the difficult decision not to pay increases in that 1 year. subsequently, and by the way, when the ANC coalition took over, they didn't agree to pay increases. Yeah. They went through with a case, and the city won the case at the Labour Court. And the judge said, this is terrible.
Yeah.
Nobody should be in the circumstances, but you know, quite frankly, many people in the private sector often are in those circumstances. Yeah. And I think that decision was important not just to show steel in the face of violence and criminality. It was not a majority of the workforce who participated in that strike. In fact, a lot of our mission was to protect workers who wanted to work. But it was an important principle for the rule of law, standing up against criminality, but also that 600 million rand saving. So remember, it's 600 million rand in the first year, but that compounds then.
Yeah. Yeah.
That saving enabled the city to reach a favorable payment arrangement with Eskom. Yeah. And so for a number of reasons, it was worth the pain. But listen, I can tell you no mayor wants to be you know, in the midst of a strike with your workforce.
Yeah. I mean, Silas, you spoke quite in depth about what you want to fix in the city of Tshwane. Spoke about infrastructure, spoke about water, electricity, roads, fighting corruption, making sure that the city is safe. What are the stakes if you don't get elected? What happens if the DA does not take over the city of Tshwane? What is going to happen to that city? And I just want to hear from you, what is at stake if that doesn't happen, and why it's so important for us to make sure that it does happen.
So if you look at the ANC model in the metros at the moment in Gauteng, they don't have confidence in their own leadership. They simply don't have the caliber of leadership that inspire trust and have competence. And so they're almost a little bit shy. They stand back. In Tshwane, for example, you have the regional secretary of the ANC, George Machila, somebody who's got business interest in waste removal contracts. He's not in council, so it's not technically that he's, you know, breaking the rules, but he uses his political muscle. You have the deputy mayor, Bonzo Modise, who I mentioned the increase in spending on security companies by 103%. One of those companies actually have belonged to Modise. And he still hasn't produced evidence that he declared his interest or that he has divested his interest.
Sure.
So clearly the ANC sees an opportunity to get back into power, to get their hands on the patronage, to, you know, start off where they had left off with the CADA network. But they also understand that even traditional ANC supporters are tired of them. They don't want to see these faces. They don't want to see the Machilas. They don't want to see the Modises. They don't want to see the offering of essentially that thug politics. And so they stand back and they let third parties take the mayoral position. They did it in Johannesburg with Kwamanda. They're doing it in Tshwane with Moya. And they make the decisions in the background, but there's another mayoral face. The problem with that is, it is a recipe not just for corruption, state capture, the old stuff that we're trying to defeat. It's also confusing because now you don't know exactly who's accountable and what direction do we take. Do we offer the power stations to the private sector or do we offer them to Eskom? Do we fire the Royval 5 or do we reach a deal with them to bring them back? Do we protect an independent city manager who's doing well or do we replace him with a CADA? And that whole malaise just means that we lose time, we lose opportunity, things deteriorate, the investors don't come.
And the people suffer.
And the people suffer. Unnecessary suffering is prolonged. So if I have to put it in a phrase, we have to create order in the chaos of coalition politics. Coalitions can do wonderful things. And there are rules. You asked about coalitions, how to approach them. But the best thing about Cape Town is that it doesn't have a coalition.
Yeah.
It's got strong leadership. It's got a clear mandate. It is delivering. It knows where to go. It doesn't have to make compromises.
Yeah.
Now, I understand Gauteng is not Cape Town.
Yeah.
And maybe even, I don't know, hopefully your politics stays DA blue. But you need a strong anchor tenant. You need the DA or the ANC to take responsibility and say, okay, one of these two options.
Yeah.
All of these small parties in between confuse things. You vote for a party, says, we'll never work with the ANC under any circumstances, and then a year later, they deliver the ANC back to government.
Yeah.
So the implications are very, very important to consider for voters.
Mm. But give us hope, Celia. Are you optimistic about your prospects?
I am still here. I am still here. I have passed up an opportunity to go to the Gauteng legislature. I have passed up an opportunity to fill a seat in parliament because I believe our mission in Tshwane is incredibly important.
Yeah.
Mm.
We are doing well. We've got a DA branch in every single one of the 107 wards.
Hectic.
We are at the moment in Mamelodi fighting a by-election, by the way. It's you see the ANC there, you see the EFF there, you see the DA there, you see the MK there.
Mm.
Nobody else. Those are the people contesting in Mamelodi.
Yeah.
And I can feel the energy. I absolutely believe we can we can have a powerful DA showing, and we can use that to build a strong and stable leadership for the city.
I always wondered when that motion of no confidence happened, did you actually turn around and just under your breath said, "I'll be back."
Maybe subconsciously, there wasn't much time for drama. I mean, the drama was all playing out there in the council, but that was the determination, absolutely. Yeah. And listen, if you become the mayor of Tshwane, the leader of a coalition where Action SA is your partner, you gotta know. And this is not gonna be, you know, there's not much job security here. So you gotta make your plans it's part of what makes politics exciting.
Absolutely. Mm.
Mm. Look, you've gotta have a steel spine. So good luck to you. Mm, we are hoping to see you back in the mayoral office next year.
Hoping to see you at Loftus.
I'll be there. Yeah. I'm tagging along with my husband, but we'll be there.
Good.
It was so lovely to chat to you today. I hope everyone who's watching has a better sense of your vision for Tshwane and just who you are as the man stepping up to the plate. Safe travels back to that province of yours.
Back to the sunshine.
Back to the sunshine.
And thank you, everybody, for watching. Please like, share, and subscribe. I never get that right. And we will see you next week.
Awesome.
Peace out.